First of all, I just want to thank everyone who worked on this. I was actually not the first author on this, but the person who is could not attend, so I got that unique opportunity. I don't have any disclosures. And basically what I want to go over today is a couple of things. First of all, I want to describe patient, clinician, and staff perspectives on the benefits and the drawbacks of using an interpreter. And then I want to discuss how we use these findings as we slogged through, because I don't think we ever actually got there, thinking about cost-effective modeling for interpreter services. So first of all, Robert Wood Johnson, as some of you may know, has been very interested in the value of language services delivered and how one delivers them in the medical environment. And they, after a number of grants working in the more programmatic side of things, they gave us some additional funding to do some research associated with cost effectiveness. So we used three different data sources during this 15-month period. The first was going back to the literature. You saw some of it with the previous speaker's slides to guide our development of our tools and understand what was already out there. Secondly, we developed collected additional primary data, which really had to do with how both the members of our community themselves, the patients, actually saw interpreter and language services, but also how providers saw that, and also how staff and administrators saw it. And then finally, and this has sort of been an interesting experience and will be for another time, we put together a very interesting and I think somewhat unique data set in which we combined our diabetic registry with our interpreter data set to begin to look at outcomes. So CHA, or Cambridge Health Alliance, is a public entity outside of Boston. It serves multiple communities, and as we were hearing earlier, about 50% of the population speaks another language, but they're all different kinds of languages. And I was just sort of listening, as we were listening to the previous speaker, I'm thinking, this is great, except I can't learn 10 languages, or 15, or 20, or whatever. About 35% of the patients are limited English proficient and require some type of language services. We have a very extensive multilingual department that's quite well known, and we have over 200,000 interpreter visits a year. In terms of the patient interviews that we did, we took a sample of 18 patients who were all diabetic patients and who were actively receiving care in the institution. And we developed an interview protocol, and what we did, since they all speak different languages, is we work with volunteer health advisors and we train them to do these interviews in the language of choice, and they collected them and filled out the forms. And I, again, for another time, that's a whole other discussion if you're interested in community participatory research of how you can get this type of data collected and how good the qualitative data can be. We also, though, looked at providers and leadership to try to get another perspective on how people saw language services. And so you can see here, we used similar types of open-ended questions. These were all face-to-face interviews. We then did analysis of both the quantitative data that was collected as well as the qualitative data. And so I'm just going to share some of those results with you. So first of all, the majority of the patients that we interviewed had actually used face-to-face. We use, as many organizations do, multiple modes of interpreting services. We have what we call language concordant providers. I cannot tell you, however, that they are all qualified to, in fact, be speaking to their patients in another language, which, again, another issue to put on the table. We also use telephonic interviewing, and we use face-to-face. We moved a little bit towards video, but due to some of the limitations from the equipment itself, I don't think that we're as far along as we'd like to be with that. And in general, we found, all told, people really like face-to-face, both the providers and the patients. But as I'm sure you know, that's also one of the most expensive ways to deliver this type of service. So in terms of how patients saw interpreter services, they really felt that these were helping them to understand the providers, particularly vis-a-vis medication, follow-up, how to use what their diagnosis was. We heard some interesting discussions of someone with a poor interpreting experience where the person thought they had a very bad disease, but in fact they did not have a bad disease and had to learn about that later. And so the interpreters actually did foster easier and better communication also with the physician. or knew who was working with the patients. And then there was a very high satisfaction level in general with the interpreters. There were very few areas that people complained about. Probably most of them had more to do with operational issues, like how fast the interpreter gets there. Sometimes there were some issues with language concordance. We have a very large Portuguese-speaking population. Sometimes a Spanish interpreter shows up instead of the Portuguese-speaking pop. And then the question is, what do you do? It takes a long time to get a new interpreter. Do you have to cancel the visit? Those kinds of things. This is all real life. And then we talked to staff and leadership to get their impressions, and they were much the same as what we heard from the patients, that they really felt that interpreters helped with follow-up. You heard it earlier about medical errors. There's a big area that people are starting to look at, and particularly vis-a-vis medications, better communication. Just talked a little bit about medical errors, and again, increased patient satisfaction. There's no question that everyone involved, at least at the Cambridge Health Alliance, from the patients up to the providers and to the staff, feel very strongly that use of language services is imperative for what they do on a daily basis. However, again, they also saw some difficulties. There are definitely concerns about the cost, about the immediacy of being able to get interpreters, and how you staff your clinics. We have multiple clinics in various different sites. Because of the variety of languages that we serve, you can't always just say, well, I'm going to put just a Portuguese interpreter here and that'll take care of everything, because you never know when an Arabic patient will show up. Again, they talked about the face-to-face. And then we went to the providers. They were the ones who really, really focused on the face-to-face interactions. And not only did they feel that it helped their relationships with their patients, but they talked a lot about the interpreters serving almost as cultural mediators. And how important that was as well. This concept of cultural interpretation becomes very difficult to define. It's somewhat amorphous. It takes place not only in the exam room, but also takes place on the way out and the way in, and perhaps even after the patient has left, if the interpreter contacts the patient or anything like that. Some of the challenges for providers, again, all around how to get them, you know, providers, but these were all primary care docs. I am myself a primary care doc. We're really bound by the amount of time we have per visit. We can't wait around. What happens when the interpreter doesn't show up? What happens when the interpreter for the wrong language shows up? And how do you manage that within the needs of your busy workday? Now, some of the data, obviously, we have a lot of data on this. I'm giving you a very, very brief sketch of it. I think it was quite enriching for both the staff and for the providers who were involved in this to sort of get flavor from where the patients actually were coming from. And so I'm going to skip this because we sort of went on to it. So then the next piece of this is, so what do you do with that in terms of thinking about cost effectiveness? None of these that we could really find, with the exception perhaps of patient care, can actually be defined as a specific cost or impact. And that was a real challenge for us. So we learned a lot about how patients perceive interpreters, but how does one then think about how you're going to put that into specific outcomes, which aren't necessarily measured in a short-term period of time that we had. So we ended up using much more classical outcomes, some of which were mentioned. I don't want to say that they weren't in the discussions that we had with the patients and providers, but this cultural navigation, which I think is a really important piece of what's happening in language services, I think there's a lot to do in terms of figuring this out. I was at a workshop recently where they were talking about comparative effectiveness of various different interventions, and he's sitting there saying, well, one of the problems is we don't know what our patients really value. And I'm sitting there saying, we know what our patients really value, but how do we translate that into actually cost and benefits? We did look at all of these things. We're in the process of analyzing that data right now and interpreting it for publication. But again, I think this challenge of what you learn from your patients about language services and then how you actually put that into some modeling is still a challenge for us. So our next steps are that we are very interested in understanding more about the interpreting modes, particularly, and again, this role of cultural broker or cultural navigator. I think in the healthcare system, there's not a lot of flexibility to fund that type of thing, although we're hearing more and more about the concept of navigation does that navigator also take on the role of cultural interpreter? And then the other thing that we're really struggling with right now, which we also learned from our data, again, for a future presentation, is we actually found in looking at this that a good chunk of our patients, even in our system, with an enormous and a very large interpreter's department, we had about a third of our patients who received no language services during the time of this study. And we don't really know what happened to that population. We don't know if they were getting ad hoc interpreting. We don't know if they had learned English somewhere along the line and were speaking in English, or whether, I don't know if anybody saw, there's a lovely article called Un Poquito, and sorry, my voice is a little scratchy, where providers think they know a little bit of the language and sort of get by. We also have some hypothesis that depending on the length or the complexity of the visit may also determine when a provider reaches out to get a formal interpreter versus trying to sort of muddle through the visit, even if it's just to give, for example, a lab result or something like that. So I guess one of the things I'd say we learned from this is that there's a whole lot more to learn. And we did work with other folks in this field, and I think most of them would agree that even being able to, for the first time, combine these data sets to kind of look more at our populations was certainly an interesting and I think very valuable process. So, thank you.